particularly in the light of what happened in a place called Kandamal in Orissa in 2008. So as part of the presentation, we'll have a video clip of about 8 minutes, and then I'll go on with the talk. I've got copies of the talk for today. I'll do what I'm comfortable with, which is actually reading the talk, or else the relevant bits of the talk. And then after the first paragraph, we'll take a look at the video clip. This lecture is about the politics of religious conversion in India. It'll focus especially on the atrocities committed against the Dalit communities, particularly after the conversion to Christianity by Hindu fundamentalists belonging to the Sangh Parivar, which is a wide family of various religious and political organizations which follow an ideology known as the Hindutva. The Dalit communities are those outcast communities which were previously notoriously known as the untouchables. They have historically borne the worst brunt of the caste system in India, which is a complex and hierarchical system of ordering social structure based on the notions of purity and pollution. This talk will pay attention to the massacre of Dalit Christians and other missionaries in Kandamal district of the central Indian state of Orissa in August 2008. This presentation is informed by my own visits to Kandamal district, initially in March 2009 with a group of theologians and social activists, and later in April with a group of about 15 of my own students, who, as part of their field education, spent a month in various relief camps and villages with people affected by the Kandamal massacre. So we'll just take a few minutes. It's about 9 minutes. This clip is for about 9 minutes. So we'll take a look at the clip.
Kandamal, the serene green hilly district, is now in tears. The killing of Swami Lakshmananda Saraswati by few miscreants on 23rd August night became the reason for few fundamentalist organization to call a bun that resulted in a rampage of violence. It was a never before bun in the state of Orissa. In Kandamal, the procession carrying the body of Swami Lakshmananda to Chakkapada for cremation was being followed by violence. Perpetrators of violence were justifying their actions, alleging that Christians were involved in the killing of the Swami. Houses of poor persons of the Christian community were attacked, ransacked, destroyed, and torched in broad daylight. Oh, prayer halls and churches became the target and had to face a wrath of vandalism displayed by the miscreants. Churches were stoned, amenities thrown out, and set afire.
On 24th night, the dead body of the late Ilakkunananda Saraswati is brought into Pulwani town, and they were making procession. And on Monday, they were bringing the body of late Ilakkunananda to the street. It was nearing our church. Then I felt a little bit panic, so I told my companion priest to stay out. I sent the cook and a few boys out, some two boys I took, and I sheltered in the boys' residence hostel during this time. At 7:30, they reached in front of the church gate. Even then there was police. When the IG, it seems to be the collector also was there, and they broke the gate, they broke the wall, they entered the compound, and they went to the church, destroyed everything, broken the furniture, the holy statues, the glasses. They went around the church, broke everything. I'm a diabetic patient. I had my insulin, I had medicine, everything they brought. My mobile also brought. I was sitting in that small room with the boys. Then after 9:30, a group of people came and they started smashing the door where I was staying. It was only one door, no other way. Then the boys told me, "Father, they are coming to in search of you, to kill you." So I was panicked. The boys, many of them jumped to the wall and went away. Two boys wanted to help me, and they were about to beat me. I was helpless. And I saw a small toilet, broken toilet in that side. I went and sat. It was a horrible time for me. And they came, they looked everywhere. They said, "No, they all jumped. He is not here. Let us go." So more than half an hour I sat that broken toilet, crying. I can't express my feeling at that time.
Humanity had almost lost its place among the protesters who were in the torching of the houses and villages where members of the Christian community were living. Nothing was left. Even their amenities were set afire. About 5,000 houses in Kandhamal alone have been ransacked, looted, destroyed, and torched by now. People in those villages were attacked invariably. Many suffered injuries due to manhandling, attack, or fire. The protesters didn't even spare women and kids. The worst incident of the day happened in Padmapur of Bargad district, where an ashram inmate, Rajni Maji, was torched to death. At least 30 Christian community members lost their lives in the violent rampage that continued in Kandhamal for over a fortnight. More than 30 churches and prayer halls fell victim to the demonic actions of the hooligans, who almost regularly ransacked and torched the community religious centers. The series of violence following the death of Swami Lakshmanananda became a national shame and forced delegations to visit the communally tense state of Orissa.
Orissa mein ye cheez hamesha se hote aaya hai, shuru se hi hote aaya hai. Ab hum ye nahi keh sakte ki yahan ki sarkar is cheez ko kyon nahi control kar rahi hai. बार बार वही चीज गलती दोहराया जा रहा है, वही चीज हो रहा है, और आज भी हुआ, दो साल पहले भी हुआ था, स्टेन को भी ऐसे ही जला करके मार दिया गया था, अब क्या बात है ये सरकार जाने, लेकिन जो गलती बार बार होती है उसे कंट्रोल करना चाहिए चाहे कोई भी सरकार हो।
Lots of pressure from different quarters inside and outside forced the state government to deploy state armed police and central paramilitary forces in various sensitive points of the district. But the elements of violence crept into the rural vicinity, and the terrifying act of torching houses and villages where members of the Christian community lived went on. In rural Kandamal forced people to leave their houses and flee into the forest just to save their lives. The pain of living in the forest with kids and young girls without food was tolerable to these people than the aggression of the other community. Without people, the villages remained empty, giving the aggressors another opportunity to loot and torch. Losing everything, their houses, belongings, and the loved ones, most of the affected families went to the relief centers. The number of affected people in different relief camps amounted over 24,000, who are into tears thinking the incidents that happened with them.
I think we'll move on to the end of last paragraph of first of page number one. The events in Kandamal, needless to say, raise more questions than answers. How long? What next? Will this ever stop? In such a context, today I want to focus on the issue of conversions, taking into consideration the perspective of the subaltern Dalit communities in Kandamal, in an attempt to delineate how the underlying nationalist ideology of the Hindutva impinges upon the basic human rights of the Dalit Christian communities, who are the worst victims of the recent atrocities in Orissa. I will particularly focus on the issue of Dalit conversion to Christianity today, because the rhetoric of religious conversion has not only been pivotal in fomenting violence against the Christian Dalit communities in India and the violence and the violation of their basic human rights, but is also being widely used to justify atrocities against Christians in general and Dalit Christians in particular. Kandamal, a few clarifications. As we focus on the Kandamal context, a few things need to be clarified at the very outset. Firstly, it would be a gross misrepresentation to suggest that Kandamal is an aftermath of the murder of Swami Lakshmananda Saraswati. The systematic manner in which the unleash of violence was orchestrated bears much resemblance to the post-Christmas massacre of Dalit Christians in Kandamal in December 2007, the Gujarat massacre following the Godhra carnage against the Muslims much earlier, as well as other incidents of violence carried out against the minorities and other marginalized groups by the Hindutva forces. It just suggests that this was almost a pogrom which was premeditated and strategically executed, and probably provoked only minimally by the unfortunate killing of Swami Lakshmananda Saraswati, which has been condemned univocally by all Christians. The very fact that December 2008 commemorated one decade of the intensification of the violent hate campaign of the Hindutva forces against Christians, who became the newfound enemies of the Sangh Parivar in 1998, suggests that this is part of a wider and more concerted campaign, a Hindutva experiment. There have been comparatively less violent indications of this campaign when the former BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party government in Delhi, declared that since about half an ounce of wine was used to commemorate the Last Supper of Jesus, churches were to be considered not as religious houses, but as places of entertainment and be taxed as commercial centers. Absurd, but true. One should also be cautious about understanding this as an attack by Sangh Parivar fanatics on Christian missionaries and converts on the basis of forcible conversions. The facade of forcible conversions is being evoked by the Hindutva to justify its campaign against the minorities. One needs to look beyond this veneer. It is true that a sustained campaign was launched against churches and Christian converts, but it would be a mistake to suppose that the people who are affected in Kandamal were the stereotypical poor and hapless Dalits. The fact remains that those who are affected were also Dalits who owned houses and businesses in Kandamal, who are in many ways assertive to the extent of playing a part in the socio-economic configurations of Kandamal district, independently, and posed a threat to the continuing domination of the local elite. Especially when discussing Orissa, one also needs to understand the distinctive political matrix in which these atrocities are carried out. The political context in Orissa is one in which competing claims for the benefits of reservation policies have caused friction between the Dalits and the tribals. The Sangh Parivar has since 1998 been exploiting this rivalry to get the Kones to attack the Dalit Panus, exploiting both the traditional rivalry as well as the competition for the opportunities offered by reservation policies. In the light of these preliminary remarks, how then do we understand the interplay between caste and conversions in the recent atrocities in Kandamal and the wider ideology of Hindutva? The primary thesis that I want to explore today, as is clear from the title of my paper, is that murder of motivation is the motivation for murder. This paper suggests that the wider ideology of Hindutva, as manifested in Kandamal, has to be understood as the murder of motivation. The motivation that is sought to be murdered is the motivation of the subaltern communities to assert their identity and renegotiate the social and economic status using the avenues of religious freedom, access to education, and economic independence. One can understand the political matrix of the conversions in Kandamal using French philosopher Foucault's language of technologies of the self. We can understand the situation in Kandamal in particular as a clash between competing technologies of the self, namely the technology of self-perpetuation of the Hindutva forces and the technology of self-assertion of the subalterns, here the Dalit Christians. We'll move on to the next page. The what and why of the Hindutva. The very ideology of Hindutva, advocated by the Sangh Parivar, has to be understood as a technology of the self that seeks implicitly and covertly to sustain the caste status quo, retaining Brahmanical supremacy and dominance. It is worth examining the Hindutva ideology in detail at this point. Hindutva is a political movement which sees Hindutva, or Hinduness, as quintessentially defining Indianness. The conceptualization of Hindutva can be traced to a book published in 1923, named Hindutva by Vinayak Damodar Savarkar, an ideologue of this politics. Hindutva fabricates the concept of the Indian nation along the lines of a pan-Hindu identity. It effectively seeks to reduce India to a Hindu nation comprising of Hindus, undermining the pluralistic ethos of the country. One of the chief arguments of Hindutva was the accordance of primary citizenship status to Hindus, meaning those who considered India as both Pitrubhumi, fatherland, and Punyabhumi, holy land, as against the adherents of other faiths. Hindutva rests on three pillars of geographical unity, racial features, and common culture. It is, however, with regard to the third pillar that much of the debate on the nationalistic ideology of Hindutva has been framed. Hindutva, in its definition of Indian culture, equates Indian culture with a parochial and selective version of Hindu culture. So not all Hindu culture is Hindu for the Hindutva. As such, It adopts a narrowly Hindu view of Indian civilization, separating out the period preceding the Muslim conquest of India. It introduces a concept of nationalism defined in terms of culture, which conflates Indian culture with the term Hindu, a predominantly Brahminical and Sanskritized version of Indian culture. This becomes clear if we consider Savarkar's definition of culture. And I quote, "We Hindus are bound together, not only by the ties of love we bear to our common fatherland, and by the common blood that courses through our veins and keeps our hearts throbbing and our affections warm, but also by the ties of common homage we pay to our great civilization, our Hindu culture, which could not be better rendered than by the word Sanskriti, suggestive as it is of that language Sanskrit, which has been the chosen means of expression and preservation of that culture, of all that was best and worth preserving in the history of our race. We are one because we are a nation, a race, and own a common Sanskriti." The Hindutva forces aggressively pursue a broad goal of establishing a Hindu Rashtra, and their version of Indian nationalism seeks to be a tool in this endeavor. However, implicit in this broader goal of the Hindutva is a self-seeking goal, which is the goal of self-perpetuation of the Brahmanical dominance. Inextricably interlinked with the perpetuation of this Brahmanical dominance is the maintenance of the caste structure. Conversion to other religions frees the Dalits from the obligations imposed by the caste system and is counterproductive for the perpetuation of Brahmanical dominance. Thus, there is a direct need to subsume and retain the Dalits under the Hindu caste order by co-opting them under a Hindu identity. One needs to recognize at this point that the Hindutva's Brahmanical ideology of benefiting from the caste structure and imposing a Hindu Rashtra is severely deterred by the Indian constitution, which has always remained an anathema for the Sangh Parivar for the way in which it replaces the legal codes of the Manu Dharma Shastra. Because of the stability of the constitutional validated electoral processes, the goal of the Hindutva project of establishing a Ram Rajya can only be achieved through the venue of electoral politics. The electoral process, in spite of all its flaws, nevertheless functions as an effective surrogate space which accords equality to all Indians in contrast to other social and economic structures. The electoral process functions on the premise of one person, one vote. It thus achieves equality in according the power to people to choose their political representatives. In such a context, it is important for the Hindutva to contain the Dalits and the Adivasis under its tutelage and secure their vote bank. Hindutva's technology of self-perpetuation negotiates this terrain of ensuring that both its aspirations for social dominance as well as political power are achieved predominantly through two particular actions, namely one, striving towards the curtailing of conversions, which is most obvious in Hindutva's continued denunciation of Dalit conversions as forcible and resorting to reconversions, and secondly, by consolidating either overtly or covertly a homogenized version of Hindu identity through the tactics of co-option of Dalits and Adivasis into the Hindu fold and fragmenting the solidarity that exists between the minority and marginal identities through insinuation and innuendo. Why target conversions? The conundrum of conversion in